Ladies and gentlemen, in the blue corner, standing at a sleek 5'11", 245 pounds, the tumultuous tempest of technique, Thomas Lilly. And in the red corner, at a curvaceous 5'11", 315 pounds, the jovial juggernaut of judgment, John Cheryl Sheridan. A meeting of the masters of mastication. Turn your attention as they delve deep into all things lifting and more. This is Peak Speak.
Recording.
Cool. You know...
Hey, media team, disappointingly, owner's not open before 7 a.m. So I have to settle with second-rate coffee.
I had tea.
Look... I'm just,
nobody cares.
I'm just not a tea fan.
Like, it was Earl Grey.
I reckon I drink maybe 2 cups of tea a year. Like, every now and again, I'm like, man, I want to drink a cup of tea. It's often like a shitty winter afternoon. Bit of honey in front of the fire. It's good. But, yeah, mostly coffee.
See, I went to the States for the US Open, and the coffee was a giant disappointment. And I had two of the, like, wonderful mother flavors, or monster flavors.
Oh, yeah.
And that was all the caffeine I had. And then when I came home, I was like, you know what? I'm going to get holy, and I'm not going to drink caffeine. And I haven't really had any since I've been back.
You're not better than me just because you're not taking caffeine.
I'm not trying to be better than you, to be honest. That's, like, Everest to me. And I'm not a climber, and you clearly are.
True. That's very true. So we're going to talk about things. It's a podcast.
Injuries.
Are you
in fact,
are you going to do like are we going to do an actual intro here? Or?
You know what? I think our intro is now banter, because if we say welcome to Peak Speak, this is Thomas and John, it kind of negates the whole fantastic introduction that we have to every episode.
That's a valid point.
We don't need to say our names, A, because basically it's my mum, not even my mum, it's basically me watching this, so I already know who we are.
Yeah, and the thing is, my girlfriend said she'll watch it, but I doubt she will.
No.
Look, that's okay. I don't feel like we need to reintroduce ourselves every time we do a podcast. I know who you are, you know who I am.
Exactly. So, today we were going to talk about injuries. We're going to cover our personal experience with injuries, because we are long-term lifters, and inevitably along that road you do run into injuries. We were going to talk about some common injuries that we've seen as coaches, ask some questions around do you train through them, what can you train through, what's the process when you know that you've injured yourself. And then we were going to talk about what causes them, how they can be addressed, and so forth. How's that sound to you?
Sounds good. I'm on board with that as a thing.
All right. What injuries, John Sheridan, have you, should we say, experienced or suffered? I feel like suffering is not
suffering
a word
is a
that's
choice.
Suitable.
So that's an interesting thing, right? I think experience is probably the right word, because suffering is a decision. Like, some things are worth suffering for and some things aren't, but if you're injured and you're choosing to suffer, like, you've got to take ownership of that at some point. Otherwise you end up being the eternal victim to your own injuries, and you'll never have a fun time.
Yes. So what injuries have you experienced?
Look, I've been fairly fortunate to not experience any major injuries through my lifting / powerlifting career. I've done a lot of dumb things in my life and hurt myself. I've got like some hardware in my left elbow from a skateboarding accident as a teenager. My powerlifting career really kicked off when in 2010 I broke my hand playing rugby. I may have punched someone in the face, but I wouldn't be here if I hadn't. So, you know, lesson learned. From a lifting perspective, I've experienced a bit of like tendonitis and little aches and pains and stuff like that, but I wouldn't say I've ever had any serious injuries. The only muscle I've ever torn, I tore my calf doing a handstand.
Wait, how did you tear your calf doing a handstand? Your calves aren't doing anything, they're in the air.
Mate, I'm a finely tuned athlete, all right? So at the time, this was before I owned a gym. I was working at a before and after school care with like primary school kids. And so I was at work with a bunch of these primary school age kids who were doing handstands. And I was like, well, fuck, I want to do handstands too. So it turns out we were on a very slight incline. And so I was like facing slightly uphill and I kicked over and put my hands on the ground and my right foot was my like trail leg. And as soon as my hands hit the ground and I kicked up, I felt my right calf just tear. And so then I was like upside down and went, oh fuck, I've just torn my calf. This is gonna suck. And it did.
So no acute injuries from lifting whatsoever?
No, I don't think so.
Do you think that's because you've lifted most of your lifting life in a suit of armor?
I wouldn't say I have lifted most of my lifting life in a suit of armor. If you added up the number of reps and, you know, the total volume that I've done with suit and without suit, I've probably done a lot more without the suit. Like, the suit was something that came into lifting. You know, I'd been lifting by that point for 5 or 6 years, I think. And, you know, I'd just started to discover powerlifting, but I'd been training pretty seriously for a while at that point for rugby. So I don't, like, maybe that played a role for sure. I think the role that the suit probably played is most evident in my technical ability. I think having spent a lot of time in the suit allowed me to develop the understanding of the technical skill of lifting, which has then transferred over into better, higher quality movement in the way I move generally, which I think then has potentially played a role in my lack of major injuries.
Definitely. So you wouldn't necessarily say it's preventative, but it's more preventative than poor movement, right?
Yeah. I think it lowers the risk. I think anything where you're pushing your body to the limit in any form, there's an inherent injury risk there. Now, obviously, a sport like powerlifting is actually like significantly safer than any of the sports I've played in the rest of my life. Like, I played nearly a decade of rugby union in the front row. It's like, I've looked at the numbers in this a while ago, because I talk about this in the powerlifting fundamentals course that I do. It's something like, in a sport like AFL, I think it's, I don't remember the exact number, but it's maybe like it's 100 injuries per 1,000 hours or something like that. And then powerlifting's like less than one. Because I think it's actually, from a global perspective, quite a safe and controlled sport.
And that's it. The control is the big thing. Like,
no one's going to hit you from behind while you're squatting.
Yeah. So, for me personally, my list of injuries is probably a little bit longer.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is the thing, is I've got this nice little rosy history, and now we sit back and I'll just finish my coffee while you list out your fragile body.
I don't know if it's so much that my body is fragile, more so that I was very much an athlete first, and an athlete without the guidance of good coaching just pushes and pushes and pushes and pushes. So my list of lifting injuries, I first got a muscle tear in 2012. I tore my adductor magnus, and I tore it a week before Nationals 2012, because I was testing my opener squat in a commercial gym and someone walked into the side of the bar while I was coming up. So the bar twisted, pop went my adductor. And I didn't know a muscle tear existed. I knew nothing about physio. I knew nothing about muscle tears or any injuries or anything like that. So I thought it was just a strain. So I stretched it like crazy for like 4 weeks. I still competed, still squatted, still sumo deadlifted. And it was pretty sore after the meet, so I gave it a couple of weeks of rest. Got back into training. Within a couple of weeks, it tore again. Same thing, had a few weeks off, rested, felt pretty good. Same thing, got back into training. And the third time it tore, it was actually a bad tear, and I knew something was not right. So I went and got it checked out, got it scanned, ultrasound, got the tear results. And then from there, I tore the left labrum in early 2013, sometime between nationals and worlds.
Which side was the adductor?
The left side. So yeah. Same side. So, yeah. I mean, it's impossible to say where the labral tear came from. It could be a number of things. But what I think probably happened was that I went like psycho athlete, full robotic mobility wad mode, and banded distraction stretched the shit out of only my left side for ages. And when I watch back with a better technical eye now, looking at those videos from 2012 when I didn't really know anything, and see how much looser that left side was, I was just bottoming out on the joint, and eventually that led to joint issues, I think. So I tore it there. It was misdiagnosed for 3.5 years, so I got it repaired in 2016. While I was getting ready for the surgery to have the left side repaired, I thought it would be a good idea to just basically destroy it, so I did heaps and heaps of squatting and leg training and volume.
I think that's called the Dave Tate approach.
Yes, I was an idiot. So in the process, I tore the right labrum as well, which is actually a blessing in disguise, because the labral tears come from bony changes that eventually aggravate the joint. So that those bony changes were there, and they were quite bad. So having the labrum tear at the same time as the other one meant that I could have both of them repaired in a pretty short space, which was, like I said, a blessing in disguise. Between those 3 years, so 2012 to sort of 2016, I tore my left pec twice. I tore my rear delt. I tore a scalene in my neck. I tore my right pec twice as well. None of those were major. They're all pretty minor tears, like sort of 8 to 10 week sort of jobs.
How did you tear a scalene?
Deadlifting.
Yeah, right, okay.
Deadlifting. Yeah, it was an equipped deadlift. I hadn't equipped deadlifted for ages.
Oh, do you reckon it was like the strap pulling down on the shoulder or?
Yeah, could have been, but it was like a weird kind of Velcro popping sensation in my neck. And it was, yeah, it didn't feel real great. The good thing about it though is, like, it was sore, but it didn't debilitate me. It didn't stop me from doing very much. And since then, I have had another surgery on my left hip. I've got pretty much no labrum left on the left side, just because it was misdiagnosed for so long, and I still competed and squatted and deadlifted through all that time, and it's just kind of worn away over time. There's a bit of damage in there. They found another lesion on the hip, which is like a bony growth on the head of the femur, so they removed that. I'm 11 weeks out of surgery yesterday, and it's feeling amazing. That's pretty much the extent of my injuries, besides the kind of annoying little things like the nervy arm pain when you go to bench. I haven't had much of that, but I've had some of it. And just little strains and, you know, facet joints going in your back and having a couple of weeks off, that kind of thing. No major injuries in discs or shoulders. They've both been pretty safe. Knees have been 100%. I've never had a knee issue. Yeah, that's my list of injuries.
And that's the end of the podcast because we've run out of time.
Yeah. Let's switch this from lifting a personal perspective. And let's go into a coaching perspective. I think we'll talk about some common injuries that we've both seen. I'll use some of my personal experience with my stuff to kind of relate to the lifters listening, because, you know,
you're so relatable, Thomas.
Hey,
you're so relatable, Mr. Relatable.
Oh, thank you. I do
the man of the people.
I like the people. The people are my people. I think from a coaching perspective, it's easy to, you know, we've had experience in having lifters deal with injuries. But when you've experienced those injuries yourself, when you've gone through the process of surgery and time off and rehab, when you've gone through the process of tearing a muscle in a comp prep and having that kind of mental, oh, everything's kind of, the worlds are crashing in, you've got that empathy, you can relate to the lifters. And that can be a little bit harder from just a coaching perspective. However, from a coaching perspective, you know, you have to have that wisdom and that ability to be like, hey, you know, this isn't the end of the world. So from your perspective, what are some of the common injuries that you see in your coaching life?
So I think before I go too deeply in that, it's important to touch on the point I made earlier about powerlifting being a very safe sport. I think a lot of people maybe go a little bit too overboard on worrying about injuries. Like, by all means, you should be aware of the possibility and you should be aware of the risks you're taking, but you don't need to, you know, put yourself in a glass case so that you don't get injured. You just need to train smartly and do a lot of things that I think will prevent a lot of injuries. I mean, in theory, a lot of the injuries you see in powerlifting are almost always preventable. In practice, that's a lot harder because it involves a lot of commitment to technical perfection and removal of one's ego that allows you to really focus just on movement quality over weight on the bar, which is a hard thing to do. And I think everyone's guilty of, you know, swaying too far one way on that that spectrum. But I think overall it's the sort of sport that has a fairly common list of injuries. The list of you know, things that most powerlifters experience at some point, like you said, you know, it's the elbow pain in the bench, it's the maybe tendon issues. Like, I've experienced some quad tendinopathy for a little while that was just from too much squatting. That is the other injury I have had that I didn't think about. I'm fairly certain I tore the meniscus in my left knee a few years ago. I never got it actually diagnosed because it was right before Christmas and the scan was too much of a pain in the ass to get. And the physio and I were fairly convinced it was a meniscal tear. And I could still squat, so I kept squatting. But I did that throwing rocks, practicing for a Highland Games contest that I never got to compete in. So that's one I have had, but it hasn't really affected my training that much. I took some time off squatting and I've been okay. And as long as I look after it, you know, I don't put it in weird positions, it seems to be okay. So yeah, I think the tendinopathy thing, the like overuse injuries are the real common ones, right? I think those more sort of chronic overuse things are really common. Elbows, knees, you know, shoulders to a certain extent. And then from an acute angle, it tends to be more the sort of disky issues are the most common ones I see in several iterations. I think all of them are very manageable and very preventable in most ways. Or at least you can minimize the risk as much as you can.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's important to note that when we say preventable, when we say minimizing risk, there is always going to be freak injuries.
Yeah, for sure. And that's, I think, beyond the scope of what we're talking about today, right? Like, things like Nathan at Pro Raw tearing a quad at the bottom of a squat, like that's a catastrophic injury that maybe it was preventable, maybe there was some signs leading up to that, but I've spoken to Nathan about it. His knee was fine, like he didn't feel anything, it just happened, right? So I think that's potentially not worth delving too deeply into because it's so unpredictable in many ways.
Yeah. There's always going to be that element of...
It's a risky sport, man. Like, you put your body on the line for anything like that, and inevitably there is some risk involved.
That's it. So even though we said earlier, you know, it is a very controlled sport, it's a safer and more predictable sport than your average out on the field, have no idea what's going to happen sort of sport, there is inherent risks. There is inherent... opportunity for these sort of things to occur. From my perspective as a coach, the common injuries that I see, very much the same. Probably the most common one I deal with is that arm nervy horrible pain that you experience through squats. Hip impingement is a big one as well, especially in newer lifters that are still developing that coordination and learning how to brace and learning how to use their hips and core and everything at the same time. That's a big one that I deal with as well. This sumo deadlifting has become really cool in the last few years. and with a lot of people.
I was sumo deadlifting long before it was cool.
Yes, so did I. So we are trend setters, so to speak, especially in the podcast world. We're definitely not. Okay, and
what we are is late to the party. If we actually started a podcast when we talked about starting a podcast the first time, we'd be fucking trendsetters, but
definitely.
We're a year and a half late.
And rotator cuff issues, so just issues around the shoulder. So everyone asks, you know, how do I prevent injuries? When you ask how do you prevent injuries, it's kind of tied in with this idea of what causes injuries. And if it was as simple as taking a step back, it is simple, but it's also very complex. It's simple in the sense that better movement, like if we break up squats into lifts into squat, bench, deadlift, and then assess those systems with series of movements, better movement is going to be protective of injury in the respective areas that are being loaded in those situations. Movement is simple in appearance when it's perfect. Underlying is very complicated, and getting to that simple, efficient appearance can be very convoluted and can be very complicated depending on the individual, which is our job as a coach, right? Is to make people move better.
So I think from a macro view, it's really simple. Just move better and you're going to prevent a lot of these injuries, or at least minimize the risk. But moving better is a very, very complex task.
Yes, yeah, definitely. And then there's layers on top of that, outside of that, in terms of frequency, in terms of programming and the intensities that you're using, in terms of what you're doing outside of your training, in terms of your recovery, your nutrition, your sleep, in terms of what activities you're doing outside of your training. There can be so many factors that lead into this, and it's easy to become injured or experience an injury and be all, woe is me, this is the end of the world, where it could have been a simple thing that that led to that happening. So what causes them at its heart is potentially poor movement under load, potentially repetitive load, potentially too high intensity to handle that load, or to move properly underneath that intensity. There's no one simple, easy cause of injury. However, we can take a pretty pragmatic approach to doing our best job to prevent those injuries. So if we kind of assess some of those little injuries that we just talked about, I said that the main one that I deal with in my practice is probably that nervy, horrible arm pain in squats. There's a few layers to that. At its heart, it's better stability of the shoulder, so better control through range. Generally, it comes from poor upper back engagement and positioning in low bar squatting. When that happens, rather than the bar being supported by the musculature of your upper back and the structure of your spine when it's all locked in, it gets supported by the smaller rotator cuff muscles that aren't supposed to support 300 kilos on your back.
How much do you think that is related to, or how much do you see it related to a lack of thoracic mobility, shoulder mobility, those sort of things? Like, is it just directly a positional thing, do you think? Or do you think there's more of like an underlying movement deficiency that is exhibited in that position?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. And I think so that was one of the layers that I was talking about. So let's say you have amazing rotation of the shoulders in terms of stability. So you've got the range and you've got the strength in that position, but you're stuck in a permanent sort of kyphotic position where your upper back is rounded. Then you have to make that compensation with more range to get your hands on the bar. So you could have great rotation of the shoulders without having a good thoracic position. You're going to potentially put those shoulders out of the range that they need to be able to get your hands on the bar. Or conversely, you can have the opposite problem where your thoracic position is great, or even, you know, better than great, stuck in this sort of kind of arched up thoracic position, but you don't have the shoulder rotation to get to the bar, and you have to make that compensation. either way, you're going to run into issues. How those issues present may be slightly different. I'm working, because obviously this information is A, from me anecdotally, but B, from me talking to people who are much smarter about the human body than what I am.
It should be clarified that neither of us are physios or, you know, anything like that, and a lot of this is coming through our experience in a gym, not in a manual therapy practice or anything like that.
Yeah, so listen up when we say, what do you do when you experience an injury? Because you'll hear us say this again. Go talk to someone who knows about it. Go talk to a physio. But anyway, we'll get to that.
Exactly.
Yeah, so working with people that are smarter than I am, because that arm pain can present very differently. There's kind of like an ulnar pathway and a radial pathway that can present either on the outside of the arm or in the bicep, on the medial side of the elbow. It can present in a lot of different ways. And I suspect it comes from differences in movement deficiency, whether it be a thoracic deficiency or a shoulder deficiency. Irrespective of that, the fix is kind of the same. Better movement, better position, better engagement, right? Though a lot of those small, because people would be questioning, how can something on my back affect down my arms? A lot of those small muscles, A, connect into the front of the shoulder. B, when they get shortened and tight and tonal and beat up, they can close nerve pathways. When they impinge on nerve pathways, that can create that kind of screaming pain down your arm. A lot of the times it's pointed out as tendonitis, and then the tendon is treated. So they'll get the screaming arm pain when they bench, treat the tendon. If it's not tendonitis, it's kind of futile. You'll just keep going around in circles. And that's really at the heart of this discussion. How do we fix injuries, or how do we address injuries, or how do we overcome injuries? It's about sorting out the cause. Where does the injury come from? And it's not always as easy as treating where the pain is, right?
Yeah, well, and I think it's important to note in that aspect, and I often talk to lifters of all levels about that. Like, the pain is the symptom. The pain isn't necessarily the problem or the cause. And often it's being able to objectively look up and down the chain at what's going on everywhere else. And I think that's where we touch on all those other factors outside of training as well. Like, one of the first things I'll start talking about when people say, oh, this hurts when I, like, you know, my knees hurt when I squat. Okay, cool. Have they been hurting for a while, or is this a new thing? Have they, you know, is it a load related thing? Is it a volume related thing? Like, starting to address these questions about causes and stuff like that is really important to begin the process. Because I think, like you said, if you're just treating the area that hurts, the pain, if you're just treating the elbow or whatever it is, you're only addressing the surface. And like in your case, Thomas, with the adductor tear early on, the most common thing I see is people like, oh, my elbow hurts when I squat. I'm just going to not straight bar squat for a few weeks. And suddenly your elbow feels better. And then you get back into training and your elbow starts to hurt again. And you just go through this cycle where you're never actually addressing the root cause of the problem.
Yeah, so understanding the cause, you may not be able to do that. So, I mean, that's a good time to kind of say, what happens when you get an injury? What do you do? This is where it gets a little bit gray, because I work with a lot of people, and I work with some really strong people that are very hypochondriac, especially if they've never felt an injury, had any sort of real injury, which is a good thing. Like, it's good to be cautious of, okay, something's not feeling 100% right. I don't want to hurt myself. I'm going to stop. I'm going to change. I'm going to get this checked out. But it's there's like a happy range, right? If you're too far down that spectrum, you can prevent yourself, you know, if you feel... The thing is, when you've got load on your back and you're doing countless reps, things aren't always going to feel amazing, right? Things aren't always going to feel great. And it's not about pushing through those things stupidly, but the more you do this, the more in tune you become with your own body and your own sense of pain and your own sense of discomfort. And you can say, is this an issue, or am I going to hurt myself?
And that's the important, the two words you mentioned there that I think are really important are discomfort and pain. Because the thing is, when it comes to strength training of any description, any real physical training, at some point it's going to be fucking uncomfortable. And there's nothing you can do about that. But understanding that difference between, like, this is unpleasant and uncomfortable versus this hurts. Like, those are two very different things. I think a lot of people use those words in a sort of overlapping way. But yeah. It's important to understand the inherent difference between the two, because that's where you can start to find that middle ground between overly hypochondriac and throw all caution to the wind, just work harder.
Yeah. I'm pretty comfortable to say that pain is almost always your sign to stop.
Yeah.
Don't push through pain. Too. If pain
that's,
is there...
That's the baseline rule I use as well. If it hurts, you're doing it wrong, stop.
Yeah. So when you experience an injury and you think that something's wrong, you're in pain. Don't try and figure it out yourself necessarily straight away. Get it looked at by someone who knows what they're looking at, what they're looking for. Talk to your coach first. If it's mild, like if we're talking there's blood on the floor and you're fucking dying and your disc is protruding from the back of your skin on your spine, that's kind of a hospital immediately kind of deal, right? We're talking about like something's happened, something acute's happened. You can walk, you can stand, you're okay, you've got your bearings, you know something's not quite right. That's when you talk to your coach, get advice about who to see. Don't just go off and see your GP necessarily, because your GP is just going to say, here's some painkillers, enjoy.
And also often, I think it's important on that front to note that like a GP is a general practitioner, right? They're looking at everything, not just movement, sports, performance, those sort of things. I think any good coach that I know has a group of professionals around them that they can recommend people to. And having a really good physio or exercise physiologist or something like that is really, really important. When you go straight to your GP, especially if you happen to have a sort of late middle age, somewhat antiquated GP who has an approach to lifting that is, oh, well, that's just silly. You're going to hurt yourself anyway. Maybe you should stop. Like, stopping completely is not always the best advice either, right? So getting someone who has experience working with not just lifters, but athletes, because it's a mentality behind getting you back to where you were. And I've worked with physios in the past that I no longer work with, because their idea of getting me back to where I was like, well, it doesn't hurt anymore, which is not the case, right? I want to get back to where I was performance-wise or better after an injury, and the same for any athlete I coach. It's about returning to the sport that you enjoy and being able to continue to perform at a high level. So if the first person you see says, well, you should just not do that anymore, you're in the wrong room and you need to thank them politely and walk away.
Yeah. So that's, you kind of really eloquently said what I was trying to fumble over just before, is that, as coaches, as good coaches, generally your coach will have access to or connections with the relevant practitioners to deal with whatever issue you have at that point in time. And they're going to refer you to the right person. Because a good coach is going to recognize, okay, we know how to program you. We know how to deal with your technique. We didn't spend 5 years doing a physiotherapy degree so we can, fix or help work towards fixing whatever issue you have. Okay.
Exactly.
And, it's important to remember there that the coach's role should be in the very best interest of the lifter. We care about you getting better. So if we're unsure of what's going on and how to fix it, as a good coach, you have to say, I don't know, go see this person. They know a lot more than me, because our job is to make you better faster.
And there's definitely, I think I've seen the rise of it over the last few years, a rise in coaches who try and blur the lines a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really, really dangerous game to play. I think scope of practice is really important. When lifters that I coach come to me for nutritional advice, I tell them I'm not a nutritionist or a dietitian or anything like that, and I have no formal knowledge in the area of nutrition. I can give you some basic advice that is, eat animals and plants and maybe don't drink 16 beers every night. But beyond that, I'm going to send you to a nutritionist, because I'm aware as a coach that that is an area that I don't have the knowledge in, nor am I comfortable giving you advice around that, because the experience that I have is not indicative of any real formal qualification. Now, it's the same four things that I don't understand, or I don't know how to coach, right? Like, I'm not an Olympic weightlifting coach. If you come to me and you want to improve your snatch or your clean and jerk, again, I can show you some basics, because I've done it myself and I understand movement and things like that, but I'm not a specialist, and so I'm not gonna pretend to be. And I think that's the thing that happens, is a lot of people maybe let their ego get the better of them and end up in a position where they think they know a lot more than maybe they really do. And that's a dangerous game to play. That's not in the best interests of your athletes. As a coach, your role is to know your role and know where you fit into the scheme of things, right? If you look at strength and conditioning on a professional level, like you go to a major sports team, maybe more so in the States than in Australia, because their strength and conditioning industry is a lot more developed than ours. They have a whole team of physical coaches, right? They have strength coaches, conditioning coaches, they have physios, doctors, chiros, like all of that on staff. And having experts in each individual area allows you to get the best advice for that issue. And often that will be a multiple person approach. Perhaps you need to get more than one opinion. Perhaps you need to have it looked at by a physio and then a sports doctor, or things like that. So as a coach, I think the most important thing you can do is just understand what you don't know and be willing and able to refer out.
Yeah. The thing with quote unquote specialists as well, so say physiotherapists, there's a physio in every corner. And not all physios, because, you know, physios, it's just like nutrition. You have this base understanding, but then catering it to a specific sport.
Specific target audience. Like, you could be a general population physiotherapist who does most of their work with middle-aged desk workers and old people. That's maybe not the best person to see for a powerlifting injury.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're fortunate enough to have been in this game for quite a while and not have just connections in our local area, but know of people around the country, or at least know of people who we can ask who the best person is in that area. So if you're unsure, just flick us a message. We're always happy to help out. Okay. So you've injured yourself, you've gone to your physio, you've got some advice. Returning to training around injuries, training through injuries. What are your thoughts on this?
I think it's an area that's often poorly managed. I think it sounds a bit like we're harping on about it, but this comes back to having a good team around you as a coach, because you can then manage that transition from injury to post-injury to return to training, because that isn't three blocks. That's a spectrum that you have to work your way along. And if the management of that process is sort of compartmentalized too much, you end up in a position where there's no intercommunication. And so a lot of things get lost in the ether of that sort of thing, right? So one of the advantages of having a good physiotherapist that I can recommend people to is that when my lifter goes to see our physio, I then get an email from the physio with a description of the appointment and an explanation of their advice and those sort of things, right? And some recommendations, that sort of stuff. Because I have a base level understanding of physiology, anatomy, stuff like that, because I've had an education in that. A lot of the lifters I coach don't. And so when they go to a physio and then they come back to me and try and explain to me what the physio said, often there's a lot of things that get lost in translation. Whereas if I can speak directly to the physio, then we can have a conversation about, okay, what's the best approach for this person? Because that varies so much, and being able to manage that continuously through the process, especially because so many of the injuries we see in powerlifting aren't like, you're hurt, you're rehabbing, you're fixed, don't worry about it again. They are recurrent, they are chronic in many cases, and so it's important to have a continuous management process through that transition, I think.
Yeah, I think, you know, maybe rewording what you just said, they are recurrent and chronic. It's that process that you just described the goal of that is to make sure they're not recurrent and chronic, right? Working as a complete team. And we have the same. In my gym, I have two physios that train with us. They treat a lot of my lifters. I work directly with them. They'll give rehab exercises rather than giving them, they'll give them directly to the lifter, but I'll then take them from the physio and write them into their programs to make sure that they're following one piece of paper. They don't have 12 pieces of paper that they're trying to fumble through and then doing it half-assed. We'll make sure that that becomes a priority and that they start moving and lifting and getting better in general. I think, so in my personal experience, you know, I've been injured right before competitions, getting ready for comps. As a lifter, as an athlete, it can be like a kick to the head. You know, you don't want. It's really easy to get really down in the dumps and depressed. And part of that is not just because of the emotional connection to whatever you're working towards, a competition or a test day or whatever, but also it's this attachment to time. Ask any lifter, when did you start lifting? They'll be able to tell you. Ask them when you're gonna stop lifting, they'll have no answer, or they'll say never, right? We get so caught up in these like little 12-week blips of time. So people always ask me, how did you come back from surgery? It must have been such a hard process. Well, for me, I'm kind of a sicko and I enjoy the process of like rehab. I enjoy the process of relearning movement. It's like I get to start lifting all over again, and I fell in love with lifting. It's like I get to fall in lifting again and again.
And I think that's a really important point to touch on, right? That how do you come back from injury? How do you deal with it? The most common question I get on that front is it's a combination of motivation and that disappointment about maybe not being able to perform at a comp, those sort of things. And I think perspective is really, really important there. Knowing that there's always another comp you can do, you know, you're never going to stop lifting, like Thomas said, but also knowing that if you approach the injury in the right way and the return from that injury in the right way, it's a fucking excellent opportunity to come back better, to come back stronger, to come back with better movement. Just to clarify, everyone, Thomas is not wanking behind the camera, which is an awful lot like what it looks like. I'm almost certain there's a dog next to him. So looking at it from the perspective of, okay, this has happened and maybe there were some things you could do to prevent it, but it's done now and you can't change that fact. And then looking at it as, okay, this is my opportunity to learn. This is my opportunity to come back better. Like you said, you enjoy it. I enjoy it as well, man. Like the technical perfection of movement, that's my favorite part about lifting. And so any opportunity where you get that to, okay, I've got this issue and I need to learn how to fix it or how to address it in a way that corrects my movement and puts me in better positions, I really enjoy that as well. And I think if you can enjoy that process, coming back from injuries or dealing with niggles and aches and pains and stuff like that is way, way easier than if you just get into the woe is me, I'm a perpetual victim to my injuries, I'm really hardcore because I'm dealing with all these injuries. I think getting away from that approach is really important.
Yeah, for sure. Back to the blips of time, you know, and it's the other thing is that not only is that 3 months, 6 months, even a year of rebuilding that process, that's the tiniest little piece of time in your lifting life. If you're going to be lifting for as long as you say you're going to be lifting for, you don't have to be in a rush. Powerlifting isn't going anywhere. If anything, it's getting better, you know? So there's going to be a competition in 2 years' time that you can do, that you'll be better at, that you'll be stronger at. And the other part of that is exactly what you just said, that rebuilding process. You get to start again. You get to go back. You get to unlearn all those bad habits you had, rebuild all those instabilities you have, and when you get back to the same weights and beyond, which you will with time, they'll feel better, they'll feel faster, they'll feel stronger, and you'll be stronger overall. So for example, my personal experience, I came back from the States in September 2015 after doing Worlds. That competition was the first comp that I've ever been red-lighted and missed a squat on depth. And that's when I knew that, and it wasn't a technical thing, like I'd never not hit depth. It was an impingement thing. Bone was preventing me from going low enough to hit depth. It was just crashing into each other. And when that happened, I thought, this is it. You know, I have to get this surgery if I'm going to keep doing my sport, because I can't physically perform the sport within the rules that I need to perform. I didn't bomb. I did get a squat 2 depth. So I made it through. But I came back at the end of September 2015, basically didn't lift properly. Like I said, I did a shitload of volume, but it wasn't anything heavy until January. Had my first surgery in January, second surgery in February. Didn't squat again till about May. And then from that year, you know, February to the next February, or January to the next January, 12 months, I broke PBs in competition on all three lifts. By a while, because my squat got better, because I learned how to squat. I took my bench back to basics, learned how to bench better. Same thing with deadlift. All of a sudden, I was stronger than I was a year ago. And the progress that I made between those that 12 months was probably the same sort of progress that I would have made lifting with the same sort of instabilities and technical deficiencies that I was, because those things were holding me back or preventing me from making the kind of progress that I should have been making. So it's taking a step back, learning how to move. Sometimes, and you know, there's a book on this called The Gift of Injury. Sometimes injury can be that gift you need to move better, right?
Yeah, and I think that's, like I've seen lifters who, they get injured, and if you go back and look at their training, you could see that. It, like, as a coach, you can see it coming, right? In how they move, in, okay, maybe they'll get away with it for a while, especially if they're young relative to the sport, but also young in overall age. You can get away with it. The tolerance level is a little bit higher, and so potentially you're able to ignore the symptoms, and then it crops up, right? Now, how you choose to address that is ultimately what decides whether you'll have a future in the sport or not. But there are a lot of lifters who they almost need to get injured because they're so sort of head in the sand about the way they move, their understanding of technique and things like that, that, you know, every coach in the world could be telling them the same thing, but they won't be listening. And then suddenly they, you know, injure a disc or something like that, and they see the light, you know. So for some people, it really is a gift, because without it, maybe they don't ever learn those lessons. And maybe 2 years down the road, it happens, or they just never come back from it, or, you know, all these things. So I think that choosing to see it as a gift is really important.
I think it's important to touch on here as well. There's definitely a genetic component to injuries. Some people are just fucking bulletproof. I watch some people squat and I think, if I squatted like that, I would be dead. Like, how does that happen? I watch some people bench and like, how are your shoulders not exploding? How's your pec not torn off the bone? Some people are just resilient to injuries. And when you're not that person, when you're training around people that are resilient and you're that unfortunate bastard or girl bastard, that's...
I think bastard is a gender neutral term.
Okay, well, I don't know. I'm a coach, not a...
Isn't a bastard just a child born out of wedlock? I think bastard's gender neutral.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, and I'm willing to be corrected on that front.
But how often do you hear a girl called a bastard? A woman called a bastard?
Yeah, that's a society-driven problem, though. The root cause...
Problem. It's a problem.
It is a problem. You need gender equality across the board.
Insults. How about just stop calling everyone bastards?
Well, maybe if they stop being bastards.
Fair enough. I completely forgot what I was just saying. If you're that unfortunate person that's training around all these resilient people, and you're...
It happens, man. Some people are really injury prone. They start looking at barbells and they hurt things.
Yeah, so if you're that unfortunate guy or girl that just gets hurt every time you touch a bar or every time you get off the couch, it can be really depressing to train around, and you're just the unfortunate person who has to make sure everything's perfect. That's just... the pain of life.
And that comes back to just being able to, like, not stress over the things that you can't control. You know, your genetics, you can't control. Unless you want to go back and pick better parents, there's not a lot you can do about that. And so the sooner you can accept that as part of your training experience, the more positive the outcome will be. If you spend a lot of time blaming your genetics and using it as an excuse, like, I'm not as good because of this and because of that. You run into this really vicious cycle of being a victim to your genetics, being a victim to then how prone you are to injury. Like, all of that stuff is mostly out of your control. You can do the best you can to manage the risks, but ultimately that sort of genetic potential is way out of your control. So it's not worth stressing about, because yeah, you'll just hold yourself back mentally more than anything else, I think.
It's very self-limiting behavior.
Exactly.
And what you can control your technique, you can control your programming, you can control your movement, you can control your stability work. All of that stuff is going to, you know, be money in the bank in terms of preventing or lowering the risk, your individual risk of injury. Training through and around injuries. I think the biggest thing here is coming back to pain is bad. When you're rebuilding from an injury, if you've torn something, if you've had a surgery, anything like that, when you're rebuilding, pain is bad. Work within the limits of pain. And this means don't be tough. Oh, I feel pain, but I can work through it because it's not that bad. It's about, no, the pain is there. That's your sign. Okay, there's too much intensity. There's too much in volume. There's too much whatever. There's bad movement. Don't work through that. When you're rebuilding, it's about not having a limit on weight, but having a limit on pain. So again, drawing from my personal experience, my first two surgeries were pretty painful. It took me a while before I could even do a body weight squat without pain. Whereas this third surgery that I've had this year, I was pretty much pain-free straight out of the hospital. I felt I could squat straight away. You know, brain said, don't squat straight away, that's a really bad idea. But I was able to start the rehab process in terms of rebuilding strength in the muscles around it, rebuilding some stability. I was able to start that earlier than the first two surgeries because I didn't have any pain. As soon as I run into any sort of pain, or as soon as I did run into any sort of pain in the last 12 weeks with my rehab, it was just like, no, that's enough. I don't need to do any more. This is my body saying, okay, you're doing a little bit too much, pull on back. So you can, because on the flip side of all of this, it can be really detrimental and it can be really unnecessary to detrain. It's interesting looking at the research in other sports. So in terms of good scientific research, one of the most studied things is hamstring injuries in runners and sprinters, or in soccer players and sporting sort of thing. But hamstring injuries is just a big thing. When you look at hamstring ruptures, how quickly they get these people moving and using and not detraining, it's like within a couple of days, sometimes within 48 hours, they've got someone who's had a rupture of the hamstring sprinting again. Now that's not saying tear your pec, go and bench the next day.
Exactly. That's saying that under medical supervision. This isn't like, sort of blank check to tear a pec and then be back in the gym like, no, I've got to max out the next day because Thomas said so. This is about understanding the controlled scenario that those people are in. And it's that movement is often the key, right? Like, it's not about coming back to intensity. It's not about coming back to heaps of volume. It's about promoting recovery with movement. Active recovery is going to be the best way in almost all cases to recover from these sort of things. Just stopping what you're doing and sitting on your ass, you know, feeling sorry for yourself and eating ice cream out of the tub is probably not the best way to come back from any injury.
Yeah, again, you've put very eloquent, beautiful words around what I was trying to fumble over. So listen to what John says and ignore the noise. Ignore the noise that comes out of the hole in my face. One thing that's...
We're going to talk over each other. I was just going to say, on the using pain as a management thing, right? It's also important to know the difference in that aspect between technical maxes and absolute maxes in terms of what you're doing in training. And I'm sure we've already talked about doing an episode on like RPE and training by feel and stuff like that, which is also where this concept is really important. But knowing your limits and being able to address that in how you program for things is really important. If your max squat is 220 kilos, but it looks like you might have died several times in that process, maybe basing all of your training off that number is not the greatest idea. And I think it's just worth mentioning here, rather than going too deeply into it, because we'll go down a rabbit hole again. That's a whole other episode unto itself, I think.
Yeah, very good point. What I was going to kind of raise, in your experience, either anecdotally with your coaching or just from a viewpoint, do you think there's much of a difference in injury, either risk or style, and this is opening a very big proverbial can of worms, between lifters who use anabolics and who do not?
Yes, I think there's a fairly substantial difference. I have not had a lot of coaching experience with lifters who are on the Soviet sports supplements routine. So from a coaching aspect, I don't have a lot of hard evidence to back up any of my claims, but anecdotally, I've watched a lot of powerlifting and I know a lot of lifters who do subscribe to that sports supplements routine, and thus I've seen a lot of people injure themselves in ways that seem to be almost exclusively related to anabolic intake. I think understanding the mechanism for what happens when you start artificially supplementing your hormone levels, and knowing that the growth rate between muscles and connective tissue is very, very different. Muscles grow much faster and they get stronger much quicker because they have a much better nerve and vascular system. Whereas a tendon or a ligament is going to take a lot longer to actually grow, to strengthen. And so I think the most common thing I see in lifters that go down that road is they tear things off the bone, and really often very severely, because the muscles surrounding the joint are so much stronger, and inevitably there's a weak point there. It tends to be that the rapidity with which those lifters get stronger, they get bigger, almost is always correlated in my experience with the injury rate.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting discussion, and without going too deep into it, just because, not because of the tabooness of it, because I don't really think there is any tabooness of it, just because, again, like what you said earlier, it is a deep rabbit hole to go down. There's so many variables with it, and the reason why I asked is just because I think it's, or I hear it as a common point from lifters who aren't using gear, saying, you know, oh, people on gear seem to get injured so much more. Why is that? So what you touched on, I think, is an important point. The thing is, it's you can't blanket statement it like that, because it's such an independent variable. There's so many factors that go within that variable that can change. You know, some people respond to it very differently. Some people are a bit more gung-ho and take a lot more of it, and like you say, get really strong really fast. Some people are just not mature and feel like they need to test their strength every 5 minutes. So rather than looking at it as a
taboo steroid kind of thing,
look at it as any other. Sorry, Sam, fix this.
The best part is I only realized about 2 minutes ago that I didn't actually press record on Zoom. So hopefully the cameras work.
Look at it like any other training variable. If you're brand new to the sport, you're going to get big noob gains, right? If you've been in a calorie deficit for the last 5 years because you've been eating like an idiot, and you start eating a heap more, you're going to get noob sort of style gains. If you've never taken drugs before in your life and you jump on drugs, you're going to get noob style gains, right? Any factor that contributes to you getting strong faster for a period of time is going to increase that risk of injury if adequate training protocols aren't in place.
Exactly, and I think that's where it's correlation, not causation, right? It is anecdotally I've seen a lot of that, right? But often it, like, maybe the drugs thing isn't the catalyst, right? Or isn't actually the cause. Maybe the drugs is indicative of a lifter who's decided to take they're training a little bit more seriously. And so they're eating better, they're sleeping better, they're training harder, and the drugs are just the icing on the cake. And I think that's, like you said, where all of these factors play a role, and how you manage things across the board is actually the best way to manage risk in terms of injuries and stuff like that.
Yeah. Really good point. Is there anything you want to add? Because I think that's a really good way to finish this podcast.
No, I think that pretty much covers it. I think, yeah, we've said what needed to be said. I think one of the worst things you can do with injuries is go on the internet in powerlifting related forums and say, hey, my knee hurts. What advice do people have for my knee hurting during squatting? Because what you'll get is a lot of people giving you really bad advice. If you're hurt, go and see someone in person. Not through the internet, not like ring your mum who maybe is a witch doctor. Talk to your coach, find a good therapist of whatever form is most appropriate to the injury and deal with it in a professional manner. If all you're doing, and like, don't be cheap about it. Don't try and dodge bills and things like that. Invest the money in getting your shit sorted so that you can come back better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really good point. Awesome. And if you don't know how to move and you want to know how to move, we're coaches. Hit us up. Zero or Burley or PTC Gold Coast. Mostly Zero. All right. Thank you very much for tuning in. Give us 5 stars on whatever you're listening to this on. Is that a thing? Do we have to like...
So it really is a thing. My understanding is the call to action in that, like, it's cheesy and it's bullshit and I hate it, but it works. The thing to mention is that when you give us 5-star reviews, it helps us spread the word that is good information about powerlifting. So the better the reviews, the better the star ratings on things, the more people see the podcast, the more people we can get these messages across to. So, you know, you're really doing the world a favor when you give us a 5-star review.
You're definitely not inflating our own egos and making our heads even bigger than what they already are, right?
Which would be an impressive feat, if at all possible.
Well, read out the best review. That's what podcasters do as well, right?
Well, that's what Chad and Max do, and we're basically trying to be them, so...
All right. Thank you very much. We'll see you next time.